You're listening to a special Stumptown trade review coming to you from the Stumptown Comics Fest. We're here with James Sturm, creator of Market Day, among other books. But today we're going to talk about Market Day. Thanks a lot for joining us.
My pleasure.
So tell us a little bit about Market Day. What is this story?
Market Day is about a day in the life of a rug weaver who lives in the early 1900s in Eastern Europe. And it takes place over the course of a single day, where a rug weaver heads to a market to sell his rugs. And it's a day, an eventful day for him, obviously, or I might not have made the book. And basically, this rug weaver, Mendelman, he's lived a charmed life. Making a living and making art has been one and the same. And on this day, he realizes that those two pursuits might not be congruent. And he's left with a lot of questions.
So how did this story come to you?
Well, I mean, as an artist who has to earn a living, I think it's on the forefront of every writer, artist, person. I mean, most of us do not live charmed lives, so most of us have to get day jobs. And I think when you're in your 20s, it's easier. You can, you know, you think you're going to live forever. You don't necessarily need health insurance. You don't have, you know, obligations as a citizen in some ways. You don't have children, a mortgage, etc. And I think as you get older, it becomes more and more of a struggle because, you know, you have to earn a living. And, you know, it's just really hard sometimes to, you know, justify, you know, spending hours in your studio when you, you know, can't draw a hand or a building. And you're like, oh, my God, I've just spent 3 hours trying to draw a hand. What's wrong with me? Am I retarded? And, you know, I could be home cleaning the house or, you know, earning some bread or taking my kid to piano lessons. And it just gets harder and harder to kind of make a living and make art as you get older. And I think this kind of internal struggle is at the heart of Market Day.
And so, like you said, this takes place in Eastern Europe, kind of turn of the century. Why did you choose to put it in this particular time and space?
Well, I was always drawn to the photographs of Eastern European life in the early 1900s or prior to World War II. I love documentary photographs, and I love the way that, how kind of poignant they are. There's something very bittersweet about looking at, whether it's WPA photographers like Dorothea Lange or Walker Evans, and seeing these images, this moment in time preserved, and, you know, this moment that doesn't exist anymore. But when I was looking at the WPA photographs, even though these the subjects of these photographers, they were in trying circumstances. There was this kind of this humanistic dignity that rose above their circumstances, and there was this hopeful message. And you look at those photos, and you think, oh, and, you know, Roosevelt came in with the New Deal, and these people maybe got back on their feet. But when I was looking at photos of the same, you know, taken at the same during the same era, perhaps, but in Eastern Europe, I saw not that same hope because I knew historically what had happened. I saw victims, and there was something not just bittersweet but tragic about these photos, and I wanted to like kind of recalibrate my relationship with the photos, if that makes sense, and tell a story where the central characters are going through their lives and kind of that. The looming historical presence of the Holocaust didn't necessarily play in. And I felt if I could connect with these people in these photographs, who are, you know, probably some of my family and ancestors, if I could connect with them without this prism of victimhood, I felt it would connect me to that time and place. Hope that made a little sense.
Does, you know, I think I read somewhere that you said that in these photos you saw your family, not necessarily your direct ancestors, but, you know, elements of your family in them.
Well, I mean, I think maybe when I said that, like, sometimes I'll just see the shape of a fingernail or the way, you know, somebody's kind of asymmetrical, crooked smile or, you know, just certain facial features. And you know, it reminds me specifically of family members and, you know, whether they were or weren't, who knows. But, you know, it does pull on you in a way that, you know, photos of, I don't know, like just, you know, another culture or tribe might not.
And so, you know, how did you approach the art for this? Because the book has a very distinct look to it, and there are times when it's you know, lots of different colors and detailed artwork. And then there's other times where it almost breaks down into geometric shapes. So how did you, you know, make your decision for how to approach the art on this?
Well, you know, in the book, Mendelman is wrestling with bringing together art and commerce. And I think aesthetically, I was trying to bring together two different aesthetics. One was these photographs I was looking at, and printmakers from the 20s and 30s, artists like Raphael Sawyer, which is very, you know, more detailed and illustrative. And then trying to also reconcile this with a very cartoony style, very simple and pared down, something like Little Lulu, for instance, which I, you know, read to my kids and really love. And I find with comics, the illustrative work, which I'm really drawn to, doesn't always read well over 100 pages. It becomes very halting, perhaps. And so I was trying to bring together this illustrative style with this kind of pared-down cartooning style. And I think somewhere in the mix, I mean, somewhere in there, I hope I found that place where it's simple, but also has some type of reflective quality to it that some of the prints and photographs have.
And can you talk a little bit about your decision in the last, probably quarter or even less of the book? You went to a 12-panel grid format on your pages there. That was very different from the rest of the book, and I was just curious about your decision to do that, to tell the last part of the story.
Well, I think there are a few pages that there's a flashback spread where it's a little denser. There's a few places where I do that, and it just seemed appropriate for the rhythms and the, you know, the telling of the story.
And then it seems like your idea is that the Industrial Revolution had this sort of human cost to it, at least in terms of pitting the artist and the merchant kind of at war with each other, whereas before they were almost allies or had a symbiotic relationship. Is that kind of your message behind it, or what message do you want people to get from this?
Yeah, I don't want them to get any message. I just want them to read the book and take from it what they will take from it. To be honest with you, it was my publisher, when she was writing copy, said, oh, in the wake of the Industrial Revolution. And I was like, what? And I looked up, you know, the Times, like, oh, yeah, this could, you know, this actually does work out. So I'm probably getting far too much credit. I'm glad it is historically plausible in that sense. But I was really much more focused on this, you know, this individual life. And I think this could have happened 100 years earlier in a, you know, in a bazaar in Istanbul, as much as it could have happened in a, you know, in a market day in Lithuania or wherever this book takes place in Yiddish land.
And so is this the end of Mendelman's story for you, or do you have more Mendelman stories the next day, if you will?
Well, you know, one of my inspirations for Market Day was the writer Richard Ford, who wrote The Sports Writer, Independence Day, and Lay of the Land, where he follows one character over the, you know, and he kind of checks in with him years apart during these moments of transition. So I would like to return to finish, continue Mendelman's story. But, you know, I hope to, and I'm knocking on wood here. So, you know, tomorrow's anybody's day, so we'll see how that goes.
So what's next for you then?
Well, in the immediate future, you know, the book just came out, so I'm, you know, out and about promoting the book, and I'm working on a few things, and yeah, I've got some irons in the fire.
Fantastic. So we're going to end this interview the way we do, by asking you, what's your issue? What is that comic book that you just wish you could tell everybody about?
I'm going to tell people about a book by a cartoonist named Mark Allen Stamaty. And he was a second-generation Village Voice cartoonist. He's still doing amazing work. And Mark Allen Stamaty, in the late 70s, early 80s, did a serialized comic strip novel in the Village Voice, very much inspired by Dada, and it was called McDoodle Street. And it was collected as a book called McDoodle Street, and very much worth seeking out. The man was way ahead of his time, and there's this incredible kind of wonderful spirit to the book, and it really opened my eyes about the possibilities of cartooning, and it had such a liberating effect on me in terms of telling me that, like, you know what, if you've got the passion and the drive, just go for it. And this is what this book did for me. So McDoodle Street by Mark Allen Stamaty.
We'll have to check it out. Well, thanks to you very much for sitting down with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on the show. All right.